Okay, we're beginning here from the two dots on the top of Pei Amud Aleph. Rabbi Eliezer Omer Loki, the machlok between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnah regarding the status of a Sris Chama versus a Sris Adam. Now the Gemara continues and says, V'riminhu, Ben Esrim Shana, V'loi Vishtei Se'arot, and a male that reaches the age of 20 and he has yet to have two pubic hairs, Yaviu Ayashu Ben Esrim, V'husar Saris, they have to bring, the relatives of the Yivama have to bring proof that first of all he's 20 years old, and number two, proof that he is a Saris, which we'll see later on, the Simanim of a Saris. Then Lochalates, Velomi Yabim, then he won't perform Chalitza Yibum because we've defined him as a Saris. Batisrim, Velo Yavia Shtei Se'arot, Yaviau Rayashi Batisrim, Vihi Ailonit, Lochaletzet, Velomit Yabemet, Divri Beit Hillel. So the same thing is applicable by a woman, that when she reaches the age of 20, and she is classified as an ilonit, she has no simanim that indicate that she will be a reproductive female, then she's not choletzet umit yabemet. But again, the obligation is on the side of the miyabem to prove that number one, she is 20, and number two, that she's displayed the simanim that indicate that she's an ilonit, and therefore there's no need for chalitza or yibum in this case. That is the position of Beit Hillel. Beit Shammai omrim, ze v'ze b'nei 18. That it both applies at the age of 18. So Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai are just arguing about the threshold age. Beit Hillel saying it's 20, Beit Shammai saying that it's 18. Rabbi Eliezer omer hazachar kedivrei Beit Hillel. Males are like Beit Hillel that they wait until 20. But the women are guided by the threshold of Beit Shammai, which is 18, because of the known factor that women mature faster than men, just like the difference for coming of age for a woman is at 12, and for a man it's at 13, because women mature faster. Same is true with regards to this threshold for Saris and Srisa, which is that the male's threshold will be 20 years old and the female's threshold will be 18 years old. So what we're speaking about here is an instance where the normal maturation age of a male and a female is 12 and 13. Over here, these youngsters were delayed in their maturation. The question is, how long do we say that it's a delayed maturation versus an inherent problem in the individual? And that's what's being discussed over here. The threshold age at which we say, even after that, if they display the normal maturation, that's not real maturation, and it's already too late for them to really develop properly. Or we say that it's just a delayed maturation. So Beit Hillel says that threshold is 20. Beit Shammai says that threshold is 18. Rabbi Eliezer says for males it's 20. For females it is 18 years old. Now, the problem is in our Mishnah that Rabbi Eliezer says that a sris chama, lo, ki el sris chama choleitz v'chotzim lishto, b'midei sheyesh lo rifuah. Rabbi Eliezer in our Mishnah says that a Sris Chama is permitted to do Chalitza because he is not problematic. He has the possibility of being cured, and therefore he's not designated as a Saris. If he's not designated as a Saris, then he is able to participate in the Parsha of Yibum and Chalitza. So now, based on that, we have a stira here. Rabbi Eliezer over here is saying that there is such a determination of a Sris Chama once they reach 18 or 20 years old, and therefore they'd be pasul from Yibum and Chalitza. But in our Mishnah, he's saying that that's not the case, and that there is a possible cure to this problem. If that's the case, they can do Yibum Chalitza, and it's not anything with respect to age. So Amar Rami Bar Dikule Amar Shmuel. So now we have a solution to this stira in the sheet of Rabbi Eliezer, which is Chazarbo Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer changed his mind. He had one opinion, and then he changed his opinion. So Ibailuho, the question is, Mehei Hadarbe, from which one did he reverse his position? Is the Mishnah giving us the position which was the newer position, that he thinks that there is a possibility of Rifua? Or is what we just quoted the later version of Rabbi Eliezer, where he says that once you reach those threshold ages, the person is a permanent Saris, and they will not perform Chalitza or Yibum. Mar says, Tashma de Tanyo. We have a proof from a Braita. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Sris Chama Choleitz V'Choltzim Li'Ishto. A Sris Chama was married to a woman. You do perform Chalitza with his wife. Shekein B'Minan Mitrapim B'Alexandria Shel Mitzrayim. Because we have found that in Alexandria of Egypt, they do have the ability to cure these individuals. Now, Alexandria of Mitzrayim was, first of all, a very large Jewish community. And in addition to that, they were well known for their medical expertise. We find that in other places in Shas, including the ability to remove a uterus from an animal and have the animal live. We find other mentions of their medical prowess. And therefore here, Rabbi Eliezer is saying that in Alexandria of Mitzrayim, they do have a cure for this problem. Now, what the answer is not clear from here, but it seems Rashi gives two options. Either because now we have a Braita and our Mishnah, so that means that we have two sources that say Rabbi Eliezer believes that Sris Chama is curable, or maybe by the fact that Rabbi Eliezer brings specific evidence to the fact that he believes that it's Rufuah. He doesn't just say there is Rufuah. He says that specifically that there were cases that were cured in Alexandria. That's indicative of the fact that that must be his final opinion, because there's much more evidence to his position, which would indicate that is his final position. Rabbi Elazar argues here on Shmuel and says, Lo'olam lo hadarbe. He did not reverse his opinion. V'chi tanan hahi lo'onshin. There's a difference here between the issue of Yibum and Chalitza and the issue of Onshin for punishments, which is that, as far as Yibum and Chalitza are concerned, Sris Chama is part of that Parsha, and that's not a question. Over here, we're dealing with the threshold at which the person moves from a minor to being of age. So here, these individuals don't have the standard maturation process that would tell you that they're now of age, so therefore we need some other threshold. And what Rabbi Eliezer is saying is here, that they turn into a gadol from the age of 18 or 20, depending if it's a female or a male, just that they don't have the simanim that would normally make them into a gadol. So at that point, they become a gadol that is a saris, or a gdola that is an ailonit, and they have the classification of being of age, and then they are baronshin. As far as Yibum and Chalitza is concerned, they still have the ability to perform Yibum and Chalitza because the fact that there is a chance of refuah, and that chance of refuah allows them to be a part of the parsha of Yibum. Now the Gemara moves on and says, Itmar, Achal chelev ben 12 v'yom echad, ad ben 18, person who eats chelev, which is fats that are asurim, from the age of 12 until 18, benodobo simane saris, and then they have simanim that they are asaris, uleacha mikane vishte sarot, and then after that point, they reach puberty. So the fact that they reach puberty after this threshold means that the puberty is meaningless, and therefore the only guidepost that we have here is the fact that they are determined to be a saris at the age of the threshold age, which is 18. Now, what is the status of this individual once we determine that they are a saris and they are a gadol? Rav Amar Nasen Saris Lemefreya. The fact that we now know that they're saris means that they are retroactively a gadol from the age of 12, meaning that we're speaking about a girl over here, and therefore the threshold ages are 12 and 18. And that's what Rashi says. Even though the terminology is used here as saris, which is zachar, nevertheless, from the ages, you can see that we're speaking about a female, and therefore we're talking about from 12 years until 18 years old. And what Rav says is, once we reach the age of 18, and we realize that they're never going to reach puberty, then retroactively, from the age of 12, they're already a gadol. Shmuel Amar, katana ya botosha. Again, that from that point, they are a katan until 18. At that point forward, then they're considered to be a gadol. So the argument between Rav and Shmuel is, once we reach the threshold of 18, whereby maturation is not going to matter anymore, so we can assume that it wasn't just a delayed maturation of these individuals, but rather this was a case where they are actually gidolim, but they are saris or ailonit. They are never going to reach that point of maturing into a full male or female. So now, when do they become a gadol? We've realized now at the age of 18 that they are actually gidolim, and they're not going to show us these other signs. So now, what do we say? From that point of 18 forward, that's when they're a gadol? Or do we say retroactively now gives us evidence of the fact that they were really gedolim at the age of 12 or 13 for a boy, like everybody else, the chazaka, that's the time period in which normal people would reach puberty, therefore that's the age when they are already considered to be of age. And so Rav says, yes, once we know that information, we can go back retroactively and assign them that they are gedolim from that age. On the other hand, Shmuel says, no, it's only prospectively that they are considered to be gedolim. Matkif la Rav Yosef the Rav. So Rav Yosef challenges Rav's position and says, Ailonit the Rabbi Meir, Yehela Knas. Therefore, according to your explanation, Rav, an Eilei Nit should have a din of Knas. Now this goes to a machloket about the issue of Knas. Knas is the fine for someone that rapes a betula. It also is a fine that is associated with pitui, with seduction. That fine that the Torah signs, there's a question as to when it applies. So Rabbi Meir says that a ktana, a girl who is a minor, does not get that knas, or does not receive the monies of the knas, because the parsha talks about a girl, a neara. And so what Rabbi Meir says is that means that only a neara is entitled to that knas, not a ktana, not a minor, but not a bogeret, not a woman who's over age, who is fully mature. A neara is a small window of time between the age of 12 and roughly 6 months later, 12 years and 6 months. It's the period of time from the beginning of puberty till the completion of puberty. So it runs for roughly 6 months. In that period, they're classified as a neara. What Rabbi Meir says is that the knas of betula only applies to a neara. Now, we would have thought Eilonit never is a neara, because we only find out when she becomes 18 that she wasn't really a ktana, now she's a gdola. But at the age of 18, there's no longer a suggestion that she would be a nara. But according to Rav, who says we go back retroactively and say that she was only a minor until the age of 12, and then at 12 years and one day, she now became a gdola, let's also say during that window of time, she was also a nara. And if she was a nara, then you can come up with a case where an alunit would be subject to knas of raping a betula. So if that's the case, why does Rabbi Meir say that an alunit never gets knas? Now, according to the Rabbonon of Rabbi Meir, who argue and say that even a ktana, even a minor, is entitled to that knas of betula, then it doesn't matter, because according to Shmuel, as long as she's a ktana all the way to the age of 18, that knas is still applicable. Or according to Rav, when she was a ktana, that knas was applicable. When she became of age, then the knas is no longer applicable. But according to both of them, there will be a case where an Eilonit will have a knas, because ktana counts. So therefore, the question's brought in the sheet of Rabbi Meir, who says that there is only knas by Ne'ara. So for Shmuel, it's not relevant, because she's only becoming of age at 18, and there's no issue of Ne'ara. But for Rav, who says that retroactively she came of age at the age of 12, we should also say that retroactively she was a ne'ara. Samar le abaye mikatnuta yatza the beggar. That actually she skips over the process of ne'ara. Meaning that she immediately goes from being a minor to a bogeret, to a fully mature woman. So even though Rav is saying retroactively she went from minor to being a gedola, but she goes to full maturation, because she doesn't have this process about which the puberty moves over a period of 6 months, therefore, there is a skipped stage for this woman. At 18, when we figure out that she really was of age at 12, she's just not going to show signs of maturity, then we go back and say, yes, at 12, she was a ktana, 12 years and one day, she became a bogeret, a fully mature woman, and therefore, there is no period of nara, even according to Rav. Amarlei, so Rav Yosef says back to him, kokehani milim al yoto yitamru mishmai. All these great words that you're saying, or this great explanation that you're saying, they should always say over in my name. So the way that it reads in our Gemara is that he says this to Abaye's explanation. Rabbi Yosef says, you should say over this in my name, because that's a great explanation. In other places in Shas where this appears, it's usually in a case where Rabbi Yosef says something, and then Abaye prompts him and says, you said this, Rabbi Yosef. And Rabbi Yosef, we know, was ill in the middle of his lifetime, and he forgot much of his Torah that he had learned when he was younger, and he later learned it afterwards. Abaye's Talmid was involved in that process. And so many times Abaye will remind Rav Yosef, you said this, or you said this, and then Rav Yosef will respond and say, yeah, they should always say things like that in my name, because that makes a lot of sense. If that's the case over here as well, then we're probably missing a little piece from the Gemara, which is not that Abaye is saying this answer, but rather Abaye is saying that you, Rav Yosef, said this answer, and then Rav Yosef is affirming that that's a good answer. He says they should always say over such good things in my name. But Abaye is reminding him of something that he said before he fell ill, and he had forgotten when he fell ill, and that's why Rabbi Yosef is saying, yes, you should say it over in my name. Titanio, and we have proof to this distinction that in Saris Nidon Keben Sorer Umere, here we're talking about a male, a Saris does not have a din of Ben Sorer Umere, Lefish in Ben Sorer Umere Nidon Elo Bechatimat Zakan Atachton, because the Ben Sorer Umere only has a period of time until the full puberty is reached. Meaning from the time that he has Shtei Se'arot, that he has two pubic hairs, until Nitmalei Rov Zagana Tachton, until he fills out the majority of his pubic area, that is the time period for a Ben Sorer Umoreh. That's when he's basically a Na'ar, the equivalent of Ni'ara for a girl, roughly 6 months. V'inailonit nidonit kina'ara d'murasa. And just like Abai and Yosef just said, that an Ilonit doesn't have a period of Ni'ara d'murasa, doesn't have a din of Na'ara murasa. Na'ara murasa is, again, a woman of the age of Na'ara, that 6 months period, who's engaged, and then has an extramarital affair. There's a specific punishment of skila because of the nature of the begida that is performed over here. First of all, she is mi'urasa, plus she's in ni'ara. And so because of that, there's a different din in the extramarital activity versus a eshedish or versus a tana. And the reason for that is shemikat nuta yatzal beger. Again, from her being a stage of a minor until she reaches full maturity, skips over the stage of ni'ara. So here you have a braita that supports this idea that, at least according to Rav, who says that this is retroactive, that retroactivity only says that from minor she goes to full maturity, there is no stage of ni'ara. And the same thing is true with a male. He goes from being a minor to of age without going to that stage of na'ar, or the stage where he could be chayev as a ben sorer umoreh. Well, we'll obviously have to explain this braita as being prospective, but it doesn't take anything away from his opinion because he agrees there's no stage of ni'ara or na'ar. And now we move on to Rabbi Abbo's statement. Amar Rabbi Abbo, Simanei sris vailonit uben shmona inosim behen maseh ad shehu ben esrim. The threshold for saris and ailonit is 20 years old. Now that's easy. We've just explained all of this, that you will not determine someone to be a saris or an ailonit until they cross over 20 years old, because until that point, we just call it delayed maturation. But once they reach the age of 20, we see that as a permanent problem and not simply as delayed maturation. Now, the last of these categories is ben shmona, which means a baby that is born at the 8th month of its term, meaning that the pregnancy only went to the 8th month and then the baby was born then. Chazal had a belief at that point that only a baby born at the 7th month or the 9th month was fully mature, and therefore they would survive. A child born in the 8th month was in the midst of maturation. It was considered to be premature, and because of that prematurity, they were not considered to be a baby that would successfully live. So what it says over here, according to Rashi at least, is that all three of these individuals, to be classified for a saris and an ailonit, as being a saris and ailonit and reading of age, 20 is the threshold. For a child that was born in the 8th month of pregnancy, they will not be considered a bar kayama until they cross over the threshold of 20 years old. Now that's the way Rashi explains this. We'll come back and discuss this in more detail, because we'll see that there are many problems with that explanation, especially according to which Tana was that explanation made. So now the Gemara says, Uben Shmona Mika Chaye. Since when does a baby that was born in the 8th month of pregnancy survive? Vatanya, don't we have a Braita? Ben Shmona Arehu Ke'evin. That a baby that's born in the 8th month of pregnancy is like a stone. Vasur l'taltalo. In Shabbat, you're not allowed to pick it up because it's like a stone and it's a din of muksa. Avalimo shocha alav minikato. His mother's allowed to bend over him. She can't pick him up, but she's allowed to bend over him and to nurse him. Bipnei ha-sakana, because of the danger. Over here, Rashi says something interesting. He says, sakanat shnehem, because of the danger to both of them. One, that the baby won't survive. And number two is to the buildup of the milk from the mother, the nursing will relieve her. And therefore, it's a sakana for her not to nurse. Most of the Rishonim, and Rashi himself, as the Bach points out in the Gemara in Shabbat, says that it only has to do with the sakanat aim. The only thing we're worried about is the mother's life-threatening issues. Because as far as the baby is concerned, we consider it an evet. We consider it as stone. So if it's in danger, we're not going to think about that because we don't think it's going to survive anyway. And therefore, sakana is not a consideration for the baby. Sakana is only a consideration for the mother. So the problem the Gemara has is that the braita seems to indicate that the baby's an evet, is a stone, because we don't think it's going to survive. It's not going to survive. How are we talking about, in Rabbi Abbo's statement, a baby that was born in the 8th month that is now living at the age of 20? That seems incongruent. So Gemara says, Achamai Eskina, and what's the case of Rabbi Abbo's Kishigamru Simanav? When he was born with his simanim intact, means he looked like he was fully mature. Detanyu, Ezu ben shmona. What is a ben shmona, a baby that's born in the 8th month of its term? Kol shelo kalu lo chadashav. it was in the 8th month, it didn't finish the 9th month, or it didn't finish the 7th month. Rabbi Omer, simanim mochachim alav. The only thing you need to do is check the simanim of the maturation of the fetus, which is sero v'tzipranav shelo nigmiru. If its hair and its fingernails are not fully grown in, that is considered to be a baby that is ben shmona. Taima delo gamru. That's only because they didn't grow in. Hagamru. If they did finish, meaning that the baby has fingernails and has hair, Arminin harbar zayinhu, and it's born in the 8th month of its term, then we say, really, it matured at the 7th month. Vishtihu yehu dishtai. And then he just stayed in the mother's womb for an extra month. He wasn't continuing to mature. It's not that he's born at the 8th month of the pregnancy. He was really done at the 7th month of the pregnancy. And he just hung out inside of his mother for an additional month. So therefore, it's not considered to be a ben shmona because it really matured already in the 7th month. And now it just hung around. If it continued to mature into the 8th month and was born during the 8th month, that would be problematic. Now, Elahad Avad Rava Tosva Uvda, the case where Rava Tosva did something or acted upon this, Bishash Alach Balal Midinata Yam, a woman whose husband went overseas, Vishtuya Tresa Yarche Shato, and she gave birth 12 months later. So now, if she gave birth 12 months later, her husband's gone for 12 months, the only possibility of her being pregnant is an extramarital affair. So the baby should automatically be a mamzer. Yet, Rava Tosva says, no problem, Akshere said that the baby's fine. Kiman, who was he paskening like? Kirabi. He was paskening like Rabbi Damar Mishtae, that there's a possibility that a fetus was in the uterus, and he hung out, even after the completion of the 9 months, he hung out for an extra 3 months there. Damar says, well, how is he paskening like Rabbi, who's a dat yachid? Why would he give up sock like that? So the Gemara says, Kaven de Ika Rabban Shem Gamliel Damar Mishtahe. Since we have Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, who also has a similar shita, kirabim avod, therefore now he's holding like a multiplicity, meaning that he has a rabim here, he has more than one opinion, and therefore he paskin like Rabbi and Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel together. We're going to see in a second Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel's position. But based on that, he was makshir them. Now, even though both Rabbi and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel only talk about this delay in the birth for a month, that the fetus hangs out for an extra month, nevertheless, Rava did this even with a, what seemingly is a 3 month excess above what would be a normal pregnancy. Rava Tosva still said that that was a kosher baby because we assumed that it hung out. And what is that? The Tanya, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, Kol Sheshar Lamed Yom Ba'adam, Enu Nefel. Any baby that lives for 30 days in a human being is not considered to be a Nefel. Now, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's statement is said about babies in general. It's not specifically said about a baby that was born in the 8th month of its term. It's said about babies in general. And Tosafot over here discusses that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says that any baby that lives for 30 days is considered to be a viable entity. So now we will apply the same to Ben Shmona when it comes to an 8-month-old baby as well. The baby after the 30 days is considered to be a viable entity. And so why would you ever say that it's a viable entity if it lives for 30 days? Because we know that a Ben Shmona won't survive. The answer must be that Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel thinks like Rabbi, that the baby went until 7 months, was fully mature, and then hung out for a month inside of the uterus, and then came out. And that proof to that is that after 30 days, if we see that he's still around, that proves that he's a viable baby, and he must not be an 8-month baby, he must be a 7-month baby. So now the question is, and I mentioned this before, how do we reconcile the statement of Rabbi Abo with the Psak Halacha here, like Rabbi and Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel? Because according to Rabbi, first of all, if you have simanim on the baby, then it's automatically considered to be a ben kayama. According to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, as long as it lives 30 days, it's considered to be a ben kayama. But before, Rabbi Bo says that it's not considered to be a viable entity until the age of 20. How do you reconcile between them? So, Tosafot on the previous Amud says, Umilte de Rabbi Bo ki Rabbanan. Rabbi Bo's statement is in the position of the Rabbanan. Aval in the Faresh de Rabbanan en yotze olam mitorat nefel. He says, don't suggest here that he's saying this in the position of Rabbi. It's only in the position of Chachamim who say that the threshold is 20. For Rabbi, the only question is maturity, which is the simanim of maturity. But when it comes to the 20-year threshold, you can't say that Rabbi holds of this 20-year threshold. Because if that was the case, then the Gemara shouldn't have just asked on Rabbi Tosva. They should have also asked on Rabbi Abo from Rabbi's statement. Because so it must be evidence of the fact that he is not saying this within Rabbi's position. So that's the way that Tosafot resolves the issue. He thinks like Rashi that the Ben Esrim over here applies equally to this Saris, the Ayilonit, and to the Ben Shmona, to the baby that went 8 months in term. And the way to reconcile that with the Gemara further on is to say that this is according to the sheet of the Rabbanon. According to Rabbi, who has a different way of determining whether the baby is viable or not, or Rabbi Shimon Gamliel as well, they won't hold of this. But the Rabbanon, who don't have those simanim, they will hold of the threshold of 20 years. But most of the Rishonim take issue with this and say, how could it possibly be that we have to wait until the age of 20 to know that this baby is viable? I mean, the baby's been living all these years, and now you're going to say there's still a chance that this baby is not going to be viable? Why is 20 years a threshold? The way that most of the Rishonim deal with this is that the fact that the baby was born prematurely, and possibly an 8-month pregnancy, the baby is weaker. And because the baby is weaker, even if they reach puberty at the age of 12 or 13, we don't automatically assume that means that they are a gadol until they reach the age of 20. Because we're afraid, because of their weakness, that they really haven't reached maturity, or they're really not an adult. And therefore, we wait until the age of 20 to determine that they are now fully grown and mature and they've hit puberty. And so because of that weakness, we won't determine them to be of age until they reach the age of 20. The Ramban tries to explain the statement of Rabbi Bau over here as to be differentiated, which is that the Simani Sris Vailunit, on that, the statement of Rabbi Bau says Ben Esrim is 20. But Ben Shmona is not a statement that you have to wait until the age of 20, just that Ben Shmona has a similar type of din to a Sris Vailunit, which is that they don't go by the normal threshold that we would do by people that are healthy. And that is that the Simanei Sris, which we're going to see further on, that even if a Ben Shmona has the Simanei Sris, we're not going to give him the status of a Sris until he reaches the age of 20 because of the weakness of his body or his maturation. And because of that, we will say that everything is delayed. So we will not put as much weight in his simanim as a saris, as well as his reaching the age of puberty because of this. So that's the way that many of the other Rishonim explain this. Another way to reconcile over here, and Tosafot, at the end of the Tosafot Kevan, hints at such an idea, is to say that the dinim here are slightly different, or the psak is not overlapping. And that is to say that Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel's psak, that once it lives for 30 days, or Rabbi's statement that if its fingernails or hair are fully grown, that the baby is viable, that's only to take the baby from the status of nafel to the status of a viable entity. But the statement of Rabbi Abou has nothing to do with viability. The statement of Rabbi Abou is about maturation, coming of age. And so Rabbi Abou's threshold for this Ben Shmona is 20, rather than 12 or 13, that is standard for healthy babies. And that might have to do with what the other Rishonim had suggested before, that a certain amount of weakness associated with this child because they were born prematurely. By that way, you don't have a steer anymore because they are speaking about different issues. Rabbi and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel are speaking about the issue of viable entity versus nafel, and Rabbi Bo is speaking about of age versus minor. Okay, now we move on. Tan Rabbanan, Ezuhu Sris Chama. Who is considered to be a Sris Chama and have a problem congenitally of being unable to reproduce? Koshu ben Esrim, v'loi vishte sarot. Anybody reaches the age of 20 and has yet to have puberty. Va'filu avila achar mikan. Even if he reaches puberty after the age of 20, harihu kisaris lochol dvarav. That doesn't change our determination because already it's too late. Ve'eluhein simanav. Here are other indications of the fact that a person is a Sris. Koshu ein lo zakan. Someone who does not have a beard. Usaro lakui, and his hair is problematic, is damaged in some way. The way Rashi says lakui is rach. He has soft hair. He doesn't have hair that becomes of a harder consistency that would be normal for a male. Ubisaro machli, and his skin is soft. Rashi says the skin is soft because it doesn't have any hair on it. So it's more like a female who has a clean and smooth skin, or you could argue that it's a more supple skin of the female, and that's what this male has. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Mer Mishim Rabbi Yehuda ben Yair, Ko She'im Meimav Malin Ritichot. Anybody who urinates, and when they urinate, there isn't steam that comes out from the heat of the urine. V'yesh Yomim Kol Matil Mayim Venose Kipa. Anybody who urinates and doesn't make an arc when they urinate. V'yesh Yomim Kol She'shichvat Zaro Docha. A person whose semen does not have a certain amount of viscosity to it, but rather it's very liquidy. Some say that it's anybody whose urine, if left alone, doesn't ferment and turn bad and have a bad odor to it. Someone who goes into a bath during the winter time, and his skin doesn't have the steam that comes off of it from the heat of the body being exposed to the cold air or the cold water. All of these are simanim that this individual is a saris.
If his voice is damaged, a damage over here means that it hasn't become deeper like would happen at the point of maturation.
And it's not obvious that you can distinguish between a woman and a man. And what is the story with an ilunit? Again, we have a similar type of list like we had by the males, which is koshi bat isrim. She reached the age of 20, v'lo via bet sarot. She hasn't reached puberty. Even if she reaches it afterwards, doesn't change her status, because after 20, it's meaningless. That maturation point makes it that she will no longer reach the point where she could be a reproductive female.
Ve'lein simanah, what are the simanim of an ilunit?
She doesn't have breasts. Umit kasheh b'shat tashmish, that intercourse is difficult for her. She doesn't have the natural sloping or shaped area which is above the private parts of the woman.
When her voice is very deep,
and you can't tell whether she's a male or a female. So now the Gemara asks about this. Itmar, simanei saris. Those simanim that we gave before that say that a person is a saris, is a eunuch.
Rabuna amar ad shei kulam.
You have to have all of them. In order to determine that the person is a saris, he has to show signs of all of them.
Rabbi Yochanan amar afilu be'achad mehem.
Even one is sufficient to determine the person is a saris.
Now, heicha devi shtei sarot.
In an instance where he has two hairs. Now here there's a question about the girsa, whether it says bezakan. The Tosafot says bezakan, and he keeps the girsa in. The Gra takes out the girsa, and he says it makes the whole Gemara easier if you take out the girsa, and there's evidence of the fact that it shouldn't be in the girsa. So we'll keep that in mind.
Kulei alma lo plige daji ukulan.
Everybody agrees that if you have shtei se'arot, if you have two hairs that are coming out of the beard, that you need all of the simanim, because now you already have evidence of the fact that this person is maturing, or beginning to mature, and therefore to offset that, we need the full slate of simanim in order to determine this person is a saris. On the other hand, where do they argue when he doesn't have any evidence of the fact that he's maturing? And then we have a question. Do you need all of the simanim or just some of the simanim? And now the Gemara asks, go check out about Rav Nachman. Go see if his, when he's bathing in the wintertime, whether there's a certain amount of steam or vapor that arises from his body to say that his body is warm. Again, this relates to what we saw earlier, that the Chachamim believe that the heat of the body is what allows the production of semen, and therefore in both these cases, with a case where the urine gives a sense of being hot, or the body is hot, that means that the individual has the ability to produce semen that will be efficacious. On the other hand, if they don't have this, then their semen never reaches the temperature in which it'll be viable. So he says, go check this out about Rav Nachman. Etiv Leibrat. If that's the case, then I'll let him marry my daughter. Come on. Who is he paskening like? Ravuna. He's paskening like Ravuna at Sheikulan. Because obviously he saw the other items, and he wanted to make sure that he had all of these items, so he asked the students to check him out about this one item. Mar says, lo. Rav Nachman. No, he did. He was doing legs like Rav Nachman. Why? Because Sike. And now again, the question of whether you have Dikna in here of a beard. Dikna is just Zakan in Aramaic. Do you say Sigi Digna Havile? He had these little needles that were coming out of his face, a semblance of a beard of two hairs coming out of his face. Or just say Sike without the word Digna according to the Gra. So as far as the Psak Halacha is concerned, here we have a machloket about a male, but by Elunit, the Gemara does not address it at all. Therefore, the Rishonim come to two different conclusions over here. One conclusion is that, therefore, by Ilunit, you only need one according to everybody. And the other Rishonim come to the conclusion that by Ilunit, you need all of them and nobody disagrees. So because the Gemara does not bring the Machloket Amoraim with regards to Ilunit, they assume that it's obvious that we hold like one of the two opinions with regards to Ilunit. And the question only arises with regards to a Saris and not by an Ilunit. In addition to that, this question about the Shtei Sarot that are an indication of beginning of maturation, that is also a machloket rishonim as to what is happening here. Because here, Tosfo mentions the fact that isn't one of the simanim of a saris that he doesn't grow a beard? Well, if the fact that he had two hairs in there already means that he is growing a beard.
So then how could you say that this person is a saris? So therefore, the Tosafot says, when we read, "In chashuv avatz chaserol davad yeshlo zakan, im genit magay zakano." That just having two hairs doesn't mean that you're bearded. You're only bearded when it fills out the beard. And so therefore, for Tosafot, the filling out of the beard is the sign. Whereas according to other Rishonim, just the fact that you have two hairs in the beard is already considered to be a beard and you're not a saris. And therefore, the halacha, when it's brought down the Rambam, he says, kol she'en lo zakan, somebody who doesn't have a beard. Now, for Tosafot, that means a full beard. And for others, including the Ramo, who paskins this way, that means even two sarot. B'sarot lakoy, b'sarot machlik, v'shamatiyo mayim inoser kippah, p'shich v'adzaro docha, v'ein meraglav machmitzim v'rochetz v'mei gashim, v'ein b'sarot malehebel, v'kolo lakoy, v'ein unikar ben ish l'isha. So, all of these items together, that's the determination of someone who is a sris chama. So first of all, we paskin like Rav Huna over here that you need all of them. But we see in Shulchan Aruch that's qualified by the fact that if he didn't have shtei sarot in his beard. If he has shtei sarot in his beard, then he's not considered to be a saris until he has all the simanim. But if he doesn't have shtei sarot in his beard, then he's a saris like any one of them is like the psak of Rabbi Yochanan. Now this will also be affected by the statement of Tosfot over here about the beard. Which is that if there are two hairs coming out of the beard, Tosafot says over there that you need now to get all the other simanim, and the siman of beard is that the full beard is grown in. So the two hairs throw you over to the psak halacha like Rav Huna. And therefore Tosafot says if you don't have those two hairs, then you're not even in the parsha to be in the question of whether you're saris or not. As Tosafot says on the bottom here, if he doesn't have the two hairs, we don't even have to look at the other simanim, he's considered to be a saris levadai. On the other hand, the Rishonim will believe here that shtei sarot is not necessarily zikano, but two hairs, period. That means that if you don't have any hairs at all, you need to get at least one siman, like Rabbi Yochanan. Whereas when you have the two hairs, then you need to get all the simanim, like Rabbi Abo. And again, by the beard, there's a machloket as to whether the siman of not having a beard means you don't grow a full beard, or that you don't have at least two hairs that determine that there is a beard. And as far as the woman is concerned, the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch paskin, that you need all of the simanim in order for her to be determined to be an ailunit. On the other hand, the Ramah brings down, yeshomrim, she'af be'echad mehem nikreit ailunit. Even with one of them, it's enough to be considered an ailunit, like the tour, which is suggesting over here that, again, since the Gemara didn't talk about an ailunit, she must be either only need one, or must be that you need all of them, and everybody agrees to that. Right now, the Gemara continues. Saris lo choleitz v'lo miyavim v'chein ailunit. Tani saris dumia dailunit. Mayalunit bidei shamayim. Afsaris bidei shemayim, just like an ailunit is something that is congenital, so too the saris is something that is congenital. Ustamak Rabbi Akiva, and the stam over here in this letter F is like Rabbi Akiva, damar bidei adam in bidei shemayim lo. The bidei adam, the person is allowed to perform chalitza, whereas a saris shemayim, someone who is congenitally is not allowed to perform it. And based on that, that latter piece of the Mishnah is going to be explained according to Rabbi Akiva's shita, that we're talking about a sris shamayim, a congenital problem, and therefore they're not allowed to participate in the parsha of Yibam, just like an ailunit. Asaris shechalatz ivamto lo pasla, taimo de ba'alahu. The problem here is that the saris had bi'ah with this woman, and therefore since she's an eshet ach, shelo b'makom mitzvah, that's a problem of a chiyud karet, bi'ah surah, and that generates a status of zonah for the woman. And since there was a chiyuv karet, shelo b'makom mitzvah, it makes her into a zonah, and there's no longer an opportunity for yibum to be performed by the other brothers. On the other hand, ha'acher, if it was an independent party, a third party that had bia with her, lo, then that would not be the case. Meaning that this yivama has relations with a third party, not any of the brothers, then she would now be allowed to continue with the process of yibum. Because that would not disqualify her. There's only either an Iser Lav or an Iser Asay for her to have Biyah outside of the framework of Yibum. And so that would not make her into a Zonah. Lematavia Tiyuf to the Rav Amnuna. That would be a strong refutation of the position of Rav Amnuna. Damar Shomeret Yavam Shezinta Psula Livama. That a Shomeret Yavam that has Znot gets together, has relations with a third party, she then is disqualified from having Yibum perform with her. Mar says, lo, that's not the case. Hu adin afilu l'acher nami. It's true even if she had bia with someone else. So then why do we only mention a saris over here? V'adi tani reisha bididei, tananami seife bididei. Since the reisha of the Mishnah is talking about a case where it's the saris that engages with her and causes the problem, So over here, we're talking about the saris that engages there and causes the problem. But not to say that that's the saris exclusively can cause this problem. Even a third party can cause this problem, like Rav Hamnuna says, that if a third party has Bial with her, she's also disqualified from the Parsha of Yibum. V'chein Ailonit shechaltzu la achin. And similarly, an Ailonit, that a brother has had chalitza with her. Taima de Balua. Again, the reason is because they had Bial with her. Halo Balua lo. Again, if he didn't have Bial with her, no. Kiman. Tzgaloki Rabbi Yehuda. That's not like Rabbi Yehuda. Because the Rabbi Yehuda hamar Ailonit zonahi. So what we see from the Mishnah is that she's only classified as a zonah if the Yavam has Bi'ah with her, because it's lo b'makom mitzvah, there's a chiyu of karet, and when he has Yibum with her, he makes her into the zonah because this was an illicit relationship. On the other hand, just by herself, her status will not be a zonah. That goes against what Rabbi Yehuda said. We saw this earlier on Daf Samech Aleph with regards to what is the definition of a zonah. Over there, Rabbi Yehuda said the definition of a zonah is an ailonit, is considered to be a zonah. I learned it out of the psukim, that you have to be able to reproduce, not to be considered or classified as a zonah. So he would have classified the ailonit as zonah even prior to there being a problematic biyah. So it's obviously not like Rabbi Yehuda, because it was the problematic biyah that made her into a zonah, but prior to that, she was not classified as a zonah, and that's against Rabbi Yehuda's position that the default status of an ailonit is a zonah. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the top of Pei Aleph.